Hello and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is episode 200 and today Phil Brining, Joe Kirk and Katerina. Hiya guys, how do you think that one went?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I thought it was a good session, first one back. Nice and easy one to dust off the cobwebs. We had an attempt, didn't we, to try and predict 2025. not sure how well we did on that. We mentioned about the data use and access bill, which we believe is maybe going to get royal assent at some point this year, perhaps before June. We spoke about some of the proposed changes there and how we think that they will suit organizations and data subjects and kind of the impact that they will have. And then we also spoke, what else did we predict for 2025?
We talked about neural data, didn't we? About neural data, you know, growing awareness of rights. What surprised me in a way was the number of people who said they'd seen a huge increase in subject action requests over the last 12 months, you know, five different sectors, education, charities, housing, local government, and can't remember the other one. It's big. Anyway, predictions of that's going to grow. What did you about UK? What did you think was the kind of an enjoyable discussion? What was the bit that you thought was the best bit?
Well, I did enjoy the SARS bit, to be honest. The fact that we discussed to do a bill and be able to understand the reason why probably the SARS are so increasing and the exercise of these rights from the individuals are increasing, probably because they finally are aware and finally got to read the privacy notice or not. But trying to navigate about it was really interesting. And I really liked to talk about neural data and the fact that probably the VPN can be or not be a security tool to use.
Yeah, that was quite worrying, wasn't it?
It was quite worrying.
The news stories about the insecurity of VPNs, you know, through malware. I mean, you might have heard of it, Miles. I can't remember what they called it now, Ghost SEO or something. Sort of, it's a very strange thing I'd not heard of before when I was reading up on it. The SEO poisoning tactics. So I wasn't entirely sure what they were. So that's something to read up on and talk about in the future. But it was a good session. A lot of people on, 110 people on, a lot of chat. It was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah. Very talkative.
Very talkative. And so on that note, we'll leave you to dive in. If it's
very
not,
good.
Then you can give me some pointers on a postcard. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. So New Year, Happy New Year to everybody. That's the first thing to say, isn't it?
Yes, although we're Happy 10 New days Year. Late, but yes, Happy New
yes,
Year.
Yes, it's the first opportunity we've had. And did you have a good Christmas and New Year too?
I did. Yes, it was okay. I went back to the Motherland Derby for 4 days. 4 days was plenty, and then back up to Leeds for New Year to celebrate with friends, which was nice. How was yours?
It was great, thank you. Yeah, very relaxing, which is just what I needed, really, to be honest.
No, that's good. That's good. Mine was all right as well. I went back to home, back to Portugal, where the weather was amazing. And I then come back for the New Year's. So for my first time celebrating the New Year outside of Portugal was surprising and different, but was really good.
Right. Very good. Very good. So first week back, is it? That's my first week back of the year. I've been busy with catching up with stuff, doing a lot of interviews. We're interviewing for account manager replaced Jasmine, which is no mean feat, is it, of course? I was in the office yesterday, which was very nice. Had a few things. I've been doing some training and document reviews. So it's been a busy week. What have you two been up to?
Come on, Joel.
Yeah, my week's been a little bit scattered. But first week back always feels like a little bit of a teething issue sort of thing. Trying to get your feet under the table. I've mainly just been contacting my customers to set up a call, really, to plan ahead for 2025 and to make sure that they're utilizing the contract. And actually yesterday me and Kate went over to Manchester in the morning and said bye to Jasmine at the airport before she left.
Oh right, didn't know she was going to yesterday.
She flew at 11, so we're in Manchester airport for 8,
right?
Said hello, said bye to her, sorry, and then worked the day from Manchester in one of those co-working spaces. It was good.
All right, it was okay. Really good. Yeah, it was different, but it was good.
I felt
very
more productive than I've been
was
in the office.
Was very productive, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I found that yesterday because the two noisy people weren't in the office. Now, we were meant to be in London, of course, on Wednesday, Joe, doing an audit, but that all got scotched, didn't it?
It did, yes. Unfortunately, but we've rescheduled that for later on in the month. And I'm actually, one thing that we are focusing more on as consultants this year is going on site visits. So not next week, but the week after, me and Kate are actually both off London to see our own respective customers for a couple of days, to have a couple of days on site. So yeah, they should be really useful, I think. I always do quite enjoy going out and having a full day
it's
working.
Different. It's good. It's you get more out of it than short Teams meetings, you know. Yeah, definitely.
Agree. It's and easier. I don't have any colleagues pulling me in directions outside of the work that I'm trying to do.
No. So not until you come out and look at your emails and think, oh, God.
Yeah.
Get back on the train. Anyway, what have you seen? Have you seen anything interesting in the news over the last week or so?
I have, yeah, to be fair. I saw that Apple agreed a £95 million settlement for violating user privacy. I don't know if you saw that. I think it's to do with Siri,
yeah,
I believe.
Siri.
Yeah, so iPhone owners complained that Apple routinely recorded their private conversations after they activated Siri unintentionally and disclosed these conversations to third parties such as advertisers. A preliminary settlement was filed on Tuesday night, California, and requires approval by U.S. District Judge Jeffrey White. The lawsuit alleged the violations ran from the 17th of September to New Year's Eve 2024. Mm-hmm. It began when Siri incorporated the Hey Siri feature that allegedly led to the unauthorized recordings. Class members estimated in the tens of millions may receive up to $20 per Siri-enabled device, such as iPhones and Apple Watches. I must say, to be fair, I often catch Siri listening to me by accident. I'll be having a conversation and my watch will ping as if I've said, Hey Siri. And
that happens yesterday a lot.
Just pinged then, but I've just said, "Hey Siri." To be fair, but yeah, it does. I don't know if you guys have noticed that.
I think when I saw like an article yesterday while I was reading this, was the one article that The Guardian reported in 2019, and apparently these reports show that, for example, that human contractors tasked with reviewing anonymized recordings and grading whether the trigger was activated intentionally, and one of examples was, for example, saying "Hey Siri" or talking about Syria, the country. So it was something that, for example, was triggered because obviously the words are very similar. But they say that no, there is no sale data for marketing purpose, and that's all the lies. So there is no build of marketing profiles or anything like that. But I caught Siri just recording my data and trying to talk with me several times in my day.
So this is
scary.
This is the fine levied in the US, is it?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It's interesting. And so I wonder what will happen over here then, if anything. Now that there's a precedent.
Don't think I saw anything actually on the implications that it will have over here actually. But yeah, it'll be keen to see if any of the European supervisory authorities go for it. Maybe the Garante, they love to get, or the Irish Data Protection Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Difficult to say. I've always to say words.
So, but didn't Apple say that whilst it might have unintentionally recorded conversations, it didn't send them to advertisers or profile people for advertising? Is that one of their defences?
I think so. Yeah. But then, sorry, go on, Kate.
Sorry, go.
No, go.
No, I think that what I found was that they say that they never used Siri data to build any marketing profiles. They never made it available for advertising, and they never sold it to anyone for any purpose. And I quote, "We are constantly developing technologies to make Siri even more private and will continue to do so." And then they just provided, and I will provide in the chat, what is the privacy statement about Siri, how it is used in the data minimization kind of thing. So they are denying everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It's really, really interesting. I'll just share this in the chat.
But they've agreed to pay the $95 million settlement. So if they're denying everything, why are they paying the settlement?
Well, probably because it will be much cheaper rather than, I don't know, any complaints against it.
Anyway, well, that's in. What, anything else you've seen in the news?
I did actually see that the Garante fined OpenAI $15 million for AI training GDPR violations. So that was to do with failing to identify an appropriate lawful basis under the EU GDPR for processing personal data to train its ChatGPT AI model. In addition to the administrative fine, the company must conduct a six-month campaign to raise awareness of how AI models like ChatGPT are trained. Meanwhile, an investigation by The Guardian has found that ChatGPT may be open to manipulation using hidden content and can return malicious code from the websites it searches.
Interesting.
That's something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. Now, did you see that the EU had to fine itself for accidentally breaching the GDPR?
No, I did not see that, no.
Well, in 2022, they ran a conference called the Conference on the Future of Europe, and you could sign up to it via Facebook. And this chap, this German chap, Thomas Bindel, a Munich resident, signed up to the conference using his Facebook account and then complained that at the time the EU hadn't approved the US as a suitable place with adequacy. So he put in a complaint, which was upheld, and he got €400 for non-material damage.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was quite funny.
Well, at least they're consistent.
That's really different. Yeah, that's true. Consistency is a good word.
I also saw, I've seen a couple of news articles here about the insecurity of VPNs. I don't know if you've seen anything on that, but there was a Google warning about using legitimate VPNs that have been infected, but with malware that can exfiltrate data whilst you're thinking using a secure tunnel. Mm-hmm. And I saw something else about the same thing in Tech Radar. So there's that is worth looking at, because a lot of people assume that if you're using a VPN to access data, that it's totally locked down secure. There's now concerns that maybe they're not in certain circumstances.
Oh, that's interesting. I normally tend to use VPN when I'm with open Wi-Fi, etc. I always use a VPN with the thought that I'm in secure environment. Apparently, it's not like that.
Yeah, during the course of the conversation, I will find the couple of news posts. Just pop up to give in the chat, so you've got that. People have got that to have a look at. And then I saw something else as well. That there's a security researcher that has demonstrated that a particular type of ANPR camera produced by Motorola, a Motorola Reaper, is streaming the information to the open internet, which is also quite bizarre. So that was interesting to see. This researcher, I know he actually turned this the speed cameras, the ANPR cameras, he's accessed them and he's managed to get hold of the data and then put it into an open source place of the internet, which again is a bit worrying, isn't it? So these are the devices, devices that aren't adequately protected. I went to buy a new tumble dryer. My tumble dryer broke over Christmas, bought a new tumble dryer, and they're virtually all connect to your phone, to your home Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Well, why do I want to do that? Yeah.
In case you forget to put it on, is that
no,
be the
I think
only
it's
reason,
so that
it?
You might put it in for 60 minutes and then it'll go, oh, I've finished, or you get on it after like 20 minutes and it says, oh, I'm at 80% relative humidity still and I've still got 3 hours to go. But what's the, I just walk out the garage and have a look,
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I imagine the idea behind that is to reduce energy costs, perhaps, maybe. If it's on for like a 3 hour cycle and it all the clothes dry, it tells you everything in there's dry.
I think it's
2 hours left on its cycle.
It's for you to control directly what is happening.
Yeah, I think it's bright enough to sort itself out. This is just sort of, again, clever interaction for the sake of clever interaction's sake, in my Luddite opinion.
Yeah, I remember last year, though, we were talking about smart technologies, weren't we, and how they were listening to us in our homes.
Yeah.
Was that last year? Yeah, so, yeah it's just... I agree with you, Phil. There's no need, is there?
There's no need.
No.
I saw an interesting news yesterday that apparently Meta wants to get rid of the fast checkers on Facebook and Instagram and all the social media that Meta is the parent company. So they announced that they will discontinue proactive fast checking on its platforms, and instead they will start rely on users to flag objectionable or misleading content. And apparently, the Mark Zuckerberg said that this move is intended to reduce concerns about bias and censorship. And however, he acknowledged that the new approach will result in the company catching less bad stuff, potentially allowing more harmful or misleading content to remain online. I think this is quite interesting, isn't it? We've seen that this already happened with Twitter, because they, Elon Musk wasn't a joke. He got rid of the fast checking, and they started to have the community notes where you actually can use it. The users can use it for to fast checking and to check if the facts are correct or not, and to just spread the word.
I'm not sure I understand how it works, this fact checking.
Well, that's what they're going away from. So I think it was Meta's responsibility to fact check stories, but now they're going towards what Twitter do, which is similar to what's called community notes. I spoke about it actually last year on the podcast. I tried to dig up some old notes to try and find out what I said, but I couldn't find anything. I was
probably hungover when you were doing that one, Jim.
Yeah, maybe so. but I did a little bit of digging, and the way that community notes work is kind of like, it doesn't work by majority rules. So to identify notes that are helpful to a wide range of people, notes require agreement between contributors who have sometimes disagreed in their past ratings. This supposedly helps prevent one-sided ratings. So kind of what we're referring to here is when news articles, news pages, or anybody post a story that's inaccurate, people have the chance to vote whether it's a reliable source or not. And I remember the story that I spoke about. It was when two-tier policing was kind of big in the news in the UK. I think it was off the back of the riots in Southport, because the Guardian they tweeted saying that two-tier policing doesn't exist in the UK, and then someone put a community note under the Guardian's thing with an article from the Guardian from like 2019 saying that there is two-tier policing existing in the UK.
I remember talking about that.
Just rather quite amusing. But yeah, so that's what it's going towards. But Kay, I think you were quite concerned, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I do understand that the fast-checking systems, the work, because the fact that they are used by the social media and then these organizations, the organization will be liable to actually making sure that these actually work, and they have policies and documentation and guidance of these actually work. And the fact that they are getting rid of it, this means that the burden will be on users. So I do understand, obviously, when we use, I mean, as a user, I'll try to always to make require and maintain like vigilance, and I understand that the online world is very dangerous sometimes, and we need to make sure that we double check the facts, etc. But I am just concerned now more than ever because of, the elections and the fact that we are, that our generation is very radical, I think, in terms of ideas and political stuff. I think it's easier to misinformation, to any hate speech or inappropriate material be actually spread, and we relying on users to actually to sign or flag anything that is actually wrong or that is not, in their perspective is not correct, is kind of dangerous, I think. And my biggest concern, as per usual, are the children. So I think, they are just a particular vulnerable, aren't they, to exposure of these harmful material or the information. And I'm not sure if they don't have like in schools or etc. to actually understand how this works and the online world and the parents' responsibility to explain them. I think there are the risk of cyberbullying, there are misinformation. We can see all over the news that this can influence elections, can influence everything. So I understand that the UK Online Safety Act, they required these platforms, for example, to take measures to protect the children from harmful content. And I'm not sure the fact that they are just removing the fast checking, if they will be still compliant with to meet these obligations, because, the fast checking is just a measure for you to actually make sure that the harmful content is mitigated at least, or to try to reduce it, not to actually end it, but it helps.
The the Online Safety Act stuff is really quite interesting point, actually, Katerina, because just before I come on here, I got an email through from Freevacy, which is, you know, the pages that I use to get some of the news stories from. And it said that the former UK Technology Minister, Damian Collins, warned of potential challenges to the Online Safety Act from the incoming Trump administration, suggesting that pressure could be exerted on the UK to conform to US digital regulation standards in relation to Meta scrapping the fast check-in in the US. So, yeah, I think this could be an ongoing story that is going to be quite a large thing. I think it's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's always taking the balance, yeah, between the organizations and the rights of individuals, isn't it? I think just making sure that the regulations actually accompany and going alongside with this.
Yeah, Meta trying to not be liable to
accidentally
fact-checking that something that's false and just leaving it up to the users to decide whether it's true or not.
Yeah, because that can be very subjective, I think. But I mean, I think my perspective of what is right or wrong obviously will depend on where what I have, the environment I am, even the country probably. So, but obviously, one thing that when I came to the UK was, for example, the access of the news that I have access to, or actually how it was promoted. It was very different from I had back in Portugal or here. So actually the information that I have accessible was very, very different. So.
Very good. Very good. Now, is there anything else you want to chat on in the news or?
No, I think, should we try and turn our focus to 2025 and what may is potentially around the corner?
Yeah, I had a first, just on a side, I looked at Freevacy, landed on my inbox just before the session, but I couldn't get to any of the articles. Did you manage to click through to any?
No, but I normally just go on the Freevacy website and just click through.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. No, he said that there was an error on all the. I was five stories, I thought, oh, that looks interesting, but I couldn't get through to any of them.
No. Anyway, so shall we have a product talking about the data use and access bill, because I think that is probably the biggest thing, isn't it, coming
in? I don't know. I mean, ultimately what we're trying to have a think about, I mean, that yes is important to talk through. So what the key trends and predictions for 2025? So there's a few things I've kind of jotted down that I think probably relevant. The data use and access bill is one of those key things. I mean, I don't know what your feeling is on it, but I suspect it's going to get through in the, you know, this year into legislation.
I mean, it's due for reporting stage, isn't it? On the 21st of January in the House of Commons, I believe it still is.
It started in the Lords, didn't it?
Lords.
I think it started in the Lords. I think it's now in the Commons.
Right. Okay.
I think from memory, to be honest.
But I'm not really sure. I did see an interesting post on LinkedIn from somebody called Chris Pounder. If you don't follow him on LinkedIn, I highly recommend you do.
Yeah, he's very good.
He said that my understanding is that the report/third reading stage for the data use and access bill is set for the 21st and 28th of Jan. This is the time when government amendments will be tabled, so watch out for them. The committee stage has ended and it was pushed for in 4 days in December. And he said the bill is expected to leave for the Commons at the end of January, so expect the DP elements to gain royal assent sometime in May 2025. That's really not that far away.
It's not
all,
that far either, no.
What I'm reading, people, I think everyone's expecting it to get through. I mean, everyone was talking the DPI bill, you know, will that go through? You know, I was a bit sceptical, and then they ran out of time. They didn't try and push it through, but this is going to go through, I reckon. Whether it gets a significant amendment or not, we'll see.
I'm going to say, what's your thoughts on it? Because me and Kate had a little kind of talk through the potential proposals, and, you know, some of them made quite a lot of sense. I mean, you know, the recognised legitimate interest that the DPDI bill suggested is remaining, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing.
I think that is a pointless thing, personally. I think it's a political thing. Let's recognise legitimate interests. I suppose it makes it easier for data controllers, you know, they don't have to go through the balancing exercise. I'm not sure that's all that it's cracked up to be. But anyway, it's in there, isn't it? So it might be quite useful.
Yeah, the bit that I was concerned around was that it will permit the Secretary of State to apply a data protection test when considering whether a country, part of a country, or a controller located in a country offers an adequate level of data protection. The provisions increases the risk of divergence from European transfer standards. if the European Commission and the UK government have different views on what adequate means. And I think the danger there then is that if the UK grants adequacy to a place like China and the EU doesn't, and you're an organisation who has a subsidiary in, you're an organisation in the EU, you have a subsidiary in the UK, could you not transfer data from your office in Portugal to your subsidiary in the UK and then to China and get away around from using safeguards? Would that work? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And, you know, I think what we've looked at and talked about before is that the chain of custody doesn't go from the controller. The controller needs to be aware of where the data is going and remain responsible for it, despite it being the responsibility of the elements in the chain to draw up the contracts between themselves. Ultimately, the controller's still got to check that. So, you know, you could find that the controller in Portugal is saying, you know, no, you can't transfer it to China. Because they can't, can they? If it's a process, if it's a subsidiary and a separate controller, that's different. But if it's a processor, you know, that's going to be a problem.
You can say no.
What you said, a subsidiary. Yeah, subsidiary might be again harder for that Portuguese organisation to regulate, because if it's independent controller, they're going to make their own decisions, aren't they?
Yeah. It was just something that was probably, I think, a big concern for me, because obviously our adequacy is up, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, that's another big thing that's due this year, isn't it? So what is going to happen with that this year?
Yeah, I imagine that's very much dependent on the Dewar bill, really, and if that goes through in May.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see, because I think, God, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm sure that they do look at kind of, you know, the activity of what we've been doing in the last 4 years. And I'm sure that the DPDI bill is not going to have done us any favours when they come to review the adequacy decision, because it's clear that the UK are wanting to, you know, come away from the GDPR, which, you know, in theory could weaken data subject rights and freedoms, which, you know, I think that's our biggest risk. But we will see.
Yeah.
When it will be at the adequacy, it will be on October, end of this year. If they will know if they will renew the adequacy, isn't it? Not sure.
I'm not sure the time frame. I'm just noticing that people say they can't hear or see anything in the session, which is a little bit worrying. So I don't know if we've got people who can hear and see us or not. Don't know if you could. Yeah, people can. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, so there's obviously an issue with a couple of people. Kathy's got her hand up.
It's back down.
Oh, that was probably to say she can hear. Maybe, I don't know. Okay, there's a lot of people that can hear us and see us, which is great. So there's only a couple that can't. So I'm not entirely sure how to inform them. I think I hopefully see the chat and hopefully they'll be able to. So, oh, she can now hear. Right, okay. It's all sorted. There's a technical glitch. Sorry about that. Yes, we're here. We're here, Jill. We're just cracking on. Sorry, what you were saying about the time frame for the UK's renewal or review of its adequacy with the EU. Yeah, I don't know what the time frame is, to be honest. I think it was summer. I don't know. I'm just saying I thought it was, but I'm probably wrong.
Not sure.
But what about the, so again, back to the Dewar bill. So, you know, other key things. Again, I think that this review of the or enshrining this notion of proportionality in SARs, again, I think that's a good thing, really, but that might be tricky to actually implement as well.
I mean, it's interesting to see, because I remember the last time we had an episode about SARs, we talked about it, and me and Joe talked a little bit about it as well. But, I mean, I think it's really good for controllers, but again, what does this mean? I mean, there is no criteria or definition, is it, or be what is reasonable and proportionate. I think will be completely up to the controller to make an internal policy around or to actually consult the ICO.
Well, I would have thought it was so significant a change that the ICO would prepare some guidance and maybe update their subject tax request guidance, which might take up a few years to do, to be fair.
Yeah.
But of course, the ICO is due to get abolished in favour of a different body in this Dewar bill as well. So, yeah, I would have thought that getting themselves geared up for that is going to be of paramount importance. Again, there might be a timetable for moving over, rather than right on Friday you're all disbanded, and on Monday it's a new organisation. So it could be that they set out a 2-year frame or something to make that transition. But, you know, what does that mean for that for us and for our guidance and for their enforcement activity? You know, is it going to interrupt it? I don't know.
Well, interrupt what? There is no enforcement activity, is there really?
No. Yeah. So I wouldn't have thought it would just be left to the courts to kind of start to shape reasonable and proportionate. I would have thought the ICA would put something together and, you know, give us a clue as to what factors we ought to consider. You know, but I mean, if one of those factors is resources, you know, then smaller organizations are going to be able to say, oh no, that's far too complicated for us to do because we've got 5 employees, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a lot of factors to consider with that, reasonable and proportionate.
Agree. Sorry, just to add, Sean must have missed. She says, how's the bill progressing? We did just mention, Sean, that there's someone who's liked it as well. So I'll repeat. It's due for report. Is it reporting stage? Sorry, did I say, or committee stage on the 21st of January? And it's going to leave the House of Lords at the end of Jan and potentially Royal Assent. So, well, someone called Chris Pound on LinkedIn's suggested May 2025, so it could be quite a quick thing. So definitely something to keep an eye on. But yes, back to
It started. I'm looking at it now. It started in the Lords. It's gone through the first, second reading, committee stage, now the report stage. It has a third reading in the Lords, and then it goes to the Commons because it was introduced in the Lords. So it'll go first, second reading in the Commons, then committee, then report, then third reading, and then, you know, it moves into the final stages. But I mean, the bottom line, I think, is that a lot of people in the industry are saying if they expect it to go through, you know, and there may be some modifications to it, but in principle, you know, we're all gearing up for this one going through. Whereas when the DPDI bill was going through, I think there was a lot of people saying, surely not, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen as much backlash this time round as I did with the DPDI bill. I think a lot of people were quite worried, weren't they, with the DPDI bill, but this one doesn't seem too bad. Looking at, you know, what could be new, I did see that the bill would allow the Secretary of State to add items of special category of personal data, so that the processing of newly defined types of special category of personal data is prohibited. The example given was neurodata. The provisions cannot be used to modify the existing list of special categories of personal data specified in Article 9. So they will all remain, but more could be added, such as neurodata, I think, is the thing that they're getting at, which I imagine is to do with like Neuralink and that sort of technology, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Now, that's one of the things on my list of those to watch in 2025. I think there's going to be a growing, it's going to be a hot topic is neural data, neural privacy, sorry.
What is neural data? Me and Kate were trying to figure it out, what it actually means.
Yeah. It's data from wearable devices, virtual reality headsets, other kind of computer brain interfaces, those types of things that have got the potential to reveal sensitive data. I mean, you know, I've got some customers, not in the UK, that insist on doing lie detector tests for all their employees, which is a bit intrusive, you know. So, you know, you might find that these kind of neural privacy devices improve the accuracy of those, and you'll be able to tell if somebody's being truthful or not more easily. You might be able to read political leanings, sexual orientation, health conditions. That's really. Lots of people have got the you know, wearable devices, whether it's what you were referring to earlier, Joe, is your Apple Watch or whatever, and you know, medical implants and all sorts of things. It's all, you know, it's a growing industry, and the data related to that. I mean, Elon Musk company made some big steps last year, didn't they, in reading brain data? But where's that data going? How's it being produced?
Wouldn't that be considered health data anyway? Most of it.
Data related concerning health, not necessarily. So political leaning. I mean, yes, sensitive data, special category data, you know, in other areas as well.
But I think in terms of neural data would not actually include. I don't know. I'm thinking about like brain systems and nervous systems. Probably including like any intention, emotion. I'm saying this because we saw a news related to the Meta glasses, and it was just making a comparison with the use, because I do believe that we talked about this previously with the California Consumer Privacy Act that adopted and already included the neural data as a sensitive information and is already regulating this. And so I found an article where the Meta glasses were using, so you thought about something and without saying anything, you could see with the Meta glasses was just something that the glasses could read because of your nervous system and some signals that your brain sent to the glasses, they could read. So probably will include any intentions and cognitive states, something like that. And I'm not sure if would consider that as elf data.
That's kind of, if that's neural data, let's say that's neural data. Let's just kind of find it's neural data. The question is, how is it getting processed? You know, is it going via software as a service, third parties? You know, and what do you, I think lots of things, not necessarily all good, you know, and where is that data going? Who's got access to it? What are they using it for?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think thinking about the Meta glasses example, because if you are having the glasses and you can think about without saying, you can think and that will happen. And because we are talking about an online device, right? So it's connected to an online world. That means that it's able, it's possible that can be hacked. So what that does mean? I mean, I just don't get it. How can this be regulated or actually like safeguarded in any means? I don't know.
Before we move on the conversation, but I think
glasses,
you're going to want to hear this, Phil. She's asked me not to disclose this, but I said sorry, Jasmine. There's absolutely no way I can't bring this up. So if you remember last year, Jasmine was on here slating Meta glasses, saying how bad they are, and you know, and she doesn't agree with them and whatever. And then she went and bought a pair before she went traveling to China. I'm not.
I don't know, but I think I read some quite interesting things about other people's predictions for 2025. There's a few people saying neural data, expecting it to be much more of a hot topic, not necessarily more prevalent, but certainly people now thinking about, hang on, what does all this mean? Why are we doing this? How are we doing this? How are we protecting it? And how are we protecting individuals? Interesting stuff. So anything else on the Duo, Bill, you want to highlight or talk about? Because we've talked about it before at length, haven't we? And as it progresses, we'll probably spend more time unpacking it and having a look at the implications of it. But I mean, the bottom line is we think it's there's a lot of people who think it's going to, in some way, shape or form, get on the legislative book on this year.
Yeah, I think so. And it has got rid of a lot of the things that the DPDI bill was going to get, that was wanted to exclude from the bill, that I think people were worried about. So it doesn't weaken the definition of personal data. The DPO remains, so senior responsible individuals are gone. Change the requirements associated with record or process activities maintained by a controller or a processor. That doesn't exist anymore. So ROPAs remain. DPIAs still have to be completed. Remove the requirement to have prior consultation with the ICO if they're high risk to data subjects that cannot be mitigated after DPA has been completed. So that doesn't exist anymore. It does not contain excluding data subject access requests because they're vexatious. It doesn't contain encouragement of electoral engagement. It doesn't contain to specify the ICO's strategic direction. It doesn't contain the permission to DWP to access bank records of benefit claimants, including pensioners. It doesn't contain the abolishment of the Home Office biometrics and surveillance camera commissioner and merge the latter responsibility for the CCTV with the ICO's role. And it doesn't contain to scrap the requirement of a representative in the UK if the controller is based outside the UK and offering services to those residing in the UK.
Right.
So a lot of things that were worried about with the DPI bill that aren't in it now. And I think that's probably why there's not as much noise this time round. In terms of, you know, the consequences of it coming through. So
I think we'll be approved. Yeah.
So what else then for 2025? I think, and again, I read quite a bit about people expecting this growing exploitation of supply chains, looking for vulnerabilities in supply chains. We saw a lot of that last year, didn't we, where, you know, attackers have got into the software as a service provider databases in order to attack the kind of end company effectively. So I don't know if you would agree or what your thoughts are, where you think there'll be more. I mean, this is all, you know, helping to promote what you've been working on, Joe, attack surface management, you know, the likes of Dark Invader that we've been working with there. You know, and people are deploying those kind of tools to try and map their attack surface and measure it and manage it, and monitor it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, moving forward, I think cyber crime, I think cyber terrorism is probably going to be the new avenue that, you know, people go down to cause harm to organizations and countries as well. I think it's such a fundamental part of our life these days, you know, online services, that, you know, it causes some real damage, does it? I mean, just remember CrowdStrike last year when they went down, that had catastrophic impacts, didn't it, on travel across the world. Airports were closed and almost felt like the world was going to come to an end. So I think cyber related stuff, ransomware attacks, is, you know, and as you said there, Phil, kind of like the angle in at them for these organizations is down the supply chain, where it's probably, you know, they've got weaker security systems as opposed to those that are at the top of the chain. So yeah, I absolutely agree. I do think that this is probably going to be quite prominent in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah. So I don't know whether that puts pressure. I mean, you say they've got weaker security arrangements. Whether they do or they don't, not sure. But what we do know for a fact is there's not enough effort put in by data controllers, again, in my opinion, to authenticate and verify the security measures in place in their supply chain. So the suppliers might have great security, but I don't think anybody goes to far enough to check.
Yeah, but it goes back to the old age question of how far down do you go the supply chain as the controller to, you know, understand these things. If there's a chain of 10 organizations, are you really going to go and do
let's say you go down to the next layer, and then you need assurances that they've done appropriate due diligence on the layer down below that. So when we're doing PCI DSS work, right, you know there's this formal mechanism for attesting to compliance, which is managed by the Security Council, and you just go down to the next chain. If the supplier can show you a valid AOC, an attestation of compliance, that they've been externally or audited and verified as secure, you accept that. Yeah, but that's a proper formal structure that's managed and has been in place for 20 years by the Security Council. Yeah. But there's nothing like that in data protection. Yeah, I wouldn't say, oh, you've got to go down to the nth degree. I'd say you need to make sure that someone's been down to the nth degree, go down step by step.
But that probably doesn't happen, though, does it? Clearly, because there's issues still, but the law says
people try and shortcut it, you know.
Yeah. The law does say you should do that, doesn't it, really? If you think about it, it says that the agreement between a processor and a subprocessor is similar to that of what you have between a controller and a processor. And a controller shouldn't use a processor unless it provides sufficient guarantees. So a processor shouldn't use a subprocessor unless it provides sufficient guarantees.
Correct. But what's appropriate security? What's appropriate security? Yeah, if I'm using a supplier for processing questionnaires or anonymous questionnaires, and you're using the same processor for processing medical data, what's appropriate security for what I'm doing is not the same as what's appropriate security for what you're doing. So yeah. I think everything we do is down to its purpose orientation to purpose orientation. Rope is a purpose oriented. All this, you know, what's appropriate is down to the related to the purpose. I think what we're seeing usually doing the desk research is very generic stuff. You know, very generic. I mean, there's more and more information. There's some great stuff in my training on processors. I'm picking on Zoom. We've got fantastic information about how they're organizing stuff. And it's really easy to look at and search and understand where the data is and list of sub-processors. But other suppliers are incredibly opaque. But it's also the infrastructure. Sorry, Kate.
No, I was just saying, like, I do agree with you, but I think it's so broad, because I think probably the legislator and even the commissioner just ask just to provide anything that could be limiting the scope. And so just open, like, make it broader, even to make it probably the controller, like, being able to actually, okay, let's see, what is your purpose? If you are able to justify it, and if anything happens, there is a complaint, and if you are happy with your justification, that's it. Because I think nowadays the world and data protection is such a dynamic place, and it always depends, and is very subjective. I think that's why. But I do agree with you.
And I don't think it's up to legislators to try and fine tune what's appropriate for what they because the other tool they've got at their disposal is enforcement. So people who are seen not to have done appropriate due diligence and selected processors with the appropriate security, what happens to them? Well, get reprimanded if anything.
That's true.
Is that effective in driving down the messages? I'm not sure it is.
Well, to the biggest organizations, I'm not sure it is indeed.
But I mean, I don't know if you saw, you know that all those attacks on cables, undersea cables between Denmark and Germany and Finland and Germany. You obviously read about those, did you? Well, the Russians and Chinese have been accused of damaging the cables that link the Nordic parts of Europe with main Western Europe. And these are undersea fibre optic cables. So remember, it was about a year ago the first one happened. And anyway, I read something that they'd been, somewhere else had been mapping the seafloor and had found this massive, you know, anchor drag, which is basically a ship that's dragging its anchor along. So motoring along with its anchor down. So you're thinking, well, how do they get, you know, 1,000 meters down and snip through a cable, fiber optic cable? Well, they don't, you know, they leave their anchor down and then they just steam ahead and then, you know, they'll drag it and then it'll sever. So it's attacks on infrastructure as well. And it is the, you know, something that's going to happen more. You talk about cyber terrorism. It's not only hitting databases, it's hitting the actual infrastructure as well.
No, I didn't know that. That's quite interesting, isn't it? That's quite genius as well with the anchor. I shouldn't say that, should I really? But it's quite clever.
As a sailor, I was quite interested in it. You know. So that's why.
How far down are fibre optics? Do they run along the seafloor? Do they, or are they under the ground of the?
No, I think they just run on the surf, on the bed. Seabed, I think.
Right. So yeah, very easy to sever with an anchor, I guess then.
That's scary. Oh.
Evidently. Now, there's a lot of new data protection laws, particularly in the US. So it'll be interesting what happens when Trump comes in a few weeks' time, whether there's about 10 that are slated to get on the statute books in the US. And again, the worry I've got is they're all possibly quite fragmented. So if you work in multi-state, you know, you're going to potentially have an absolute minefield of regulation varying from state to state. But that's also something that's due to happen in 2025.
I mean, probably the biggest concern will be probably inconsistency, right? Just in making sure that if you are working with several federal states, you just, what can be applicable to one is cannot be applicable to the other. Yeah.
But then in that regard,
it'll be just a concern, like as a country, isn't it? It'll be just the same.
And I mean, it'll be the same as if you send data to the EU and you send it to Brazil, for example, you meet the standard of the EU GDPR and I guess should cover you, you'd think, in Brazil, but not necessarily, because they might have something in Brazil that's not in the EU GDPR. But it's so, yeah, no, never mind. Ignore my point. I've literally just proved myself wrong.
Excellent.
But, yeah, out loud.
Each state, good. Each state has got, you know, different qualifying things, like the Californian Consumer Privacy Act has got a volume of data qualification, hasn't it? And it's only targeting certain types of organizations. So, you know, imagine that you're there trying to operate multiple states, or even if you're over here trying to operate in multiple states, you know you're going to find different rules in different places you operate. So again, that'd be interesting to keep your eye on that. And ultimately, you know, they're going to end up where we were, you know, when the GDPR, prior to GDPR, with, you know, a directive that was interpreted slightly differently in each country, and therefore, you know, an inconsistent playing field. They'll have to level it up. They'll have to get, you know, a better, more comprehensive federal act that is applicable in the main part across this. And then it might be that states can then enhance it in certain ways. But, you know, they surely must end up with a common denominator at some point.
And I think probably my well, being American with Trump, a more organizational point of perspective, I'm thinking about probably all the laws. Well, the risk is of inconsistency is bigger, and I think includes definitions that are quite broad and more data controllers or organizations perspective rather than actually the balance of it with individuals, right? So it's something to, well, let's see.
see how that pans out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, something else I've read that people are predicting is, and I'm not sure about this one at all, is a growing awareness of data subjects' rights and more action from data subjects. I mean, do you think that's realistic? I mean, we've been, what, 6 years in? What, 1984 was the first, you know, act, 1998, you know, significant change. But we've had this a long time. This isn't new. This isn't just GDPR that's introduced right of access and right to information and stuff. Are we going to see an uptick, do you think?
I don't know.
It's
a general question. It's a question to everyone.
I mean, I'm for experience. I'm not working data protection for that long, just 2 years in next week. But I'm just concerned that because, for example, subject access requests just rise up so much since last year when I was working in support desk or the ones that I had. Right. with, for example, with my customers. And now that I'm building and drafting, for example, board reports, and actually I need to actually see the trend since 2019, 2020, 2021. And I can see actually the graphic, and they tend to really multiply. Yes. In particular, subject access requests. Right. Yeah. And housing associations. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I think they are very associated with despair claims. They are very, like, normally when we are there is a despair request, we always have a SAR request as well, always attached. But yes, yeah.
Well, I don't know if anybody else is kind of on the same page as you, Kate. That, you know, they've seen over the last 4 or 5 years a gradual increase, but you know, I think, or a big increase rather. I mean, there's probably been a gradual increase, but I don't know whether there's been a significant increase. You know, but interesting to see whether that actually happens. But it could be that, you know, we see an uptick, and then this new doer bill comes through and it changes the goalposts, and then we see a downtick
because
happens there.
And I was wondering, because artificial intelligence is quite a hot topic nowadays, I was just thinking that surely will be something to discuss in 2025. And well, if there will be a tend to actually the UK, I don't know, kind of be part of the EU Act, for example, in terms of the artificial intelligence legislation. I don't know. I know that the ICO now is producing a lot of guidance on that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I'm happy that I'm not alone.
Yeah, for those that are listening, not live, Shane says he's experienced a 700% increase in DSARs in relation to dish repair claims. So, yeah, at least Shane's seen an uptick similar to you, Kate.
Thank you.
Oh, same with medical claims. Right, okay. Oh, well. It's interesting. Yeah, maybe it's right. Maybe there's going to be an even bigger, you know, acceleration during 2025. Yeah. I read it in a few places.
But that's good, I think. The fact that the individuals are more aware, probably more aware, that the rights they have and what they actually can do to actually exercise them is good. I think it's a good one. Probably they are start reading the privacy notices.
I was going to say, where do you think this is coming from? Do you think it's from organisations now providing better privacy notices that actually contain all of the rights? Because even now, you know, coming up to almost 7 years of the GDPR being around, I'm still reading privacy policies that are missing out rights, you know, and key, I mean, they're all key, aren't they? But, you know, rights such as, I've seen one the other day, and they didn't have the right of access in there. And I just thought, it's just, you know, 7 years and you're still not listed all the other rights in your privacy policies. Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, identifying the wrong legislation. I saw that a lot as well.
So I think this is really interesting, because there's at least three, if not four, I'm not entirely sure which industry Lynn is in, but, you know, we've seen housing, medical, and schools all say big increase in SARs. So if Lynn's in financial services, then that will be four sectors. So it's definitely something there. There's a common theme.
Yeah, the Nigel Farage one's
charities as well, right?
Nigel Farage is it's quite a good point, isn't it? Because it's not really something you see in the news. And I think, Casper my back, I think that's only one of the kind of high profile stories I've seen in the news over the last couple of years about information right requests. You know, so I've mentioned on here before that I think people just aren't aware of their rights. And, you know, I think they are starting to, I mean, I'd now tell all of my friends and family about the rights, especially the right of access. You know, if you're unsure, you're trying to find something out, you feel like an organization's hiding something from me, you can find it out. People just have no idea. And, you know, these are family members who are in the 50s and 60s and have been around since,
they're not aware.
You know, the original acts of, you know, 1984 tread or whatever it was. Mm-hmm.
Tread carefully, Mr. Kirk.
No, I do agree. I do agree with you, Joe. I think, but to be honest, I obviously, in terms of a consultancy and for organizations, it can be quite tricky, because you obviously need to make sure that your organization accompanies all these increase of SARs and the subject access request or subject rights. But I think, in the other hand, makes me happy, because apparently, I mean, I'm assuming that this is happening because the individuals are more aware of their rights and how to exercise them. So that makes me happy.
Yeah. So just to answer Michael's point here, I mean, there's a few changes, but the biggest one that we've highlighted is the kind of enshrining this notion of proportionness and reasonableness into responding to SARS. So courts have swung out there. I think it's 2-1 in favour. One court ruling said proportionality wasn't applicable, and two said proportionality was applicable. So what I think the doability is doing is saying, you know, in law it is applicable. What that means in practice, as Kate said, quite rightly said, who knows, you know, what is reasonable and proportionate for one person, one organisation, one industry, you know, we'll have to just see how that unfolds. But that, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's kind of the major change in the approach to SARS.
I agree.
In the new bill. There's a lot of people then saying increase in SARS, particularly, but I don't know if there's some rights that we've never really come across. I was actually doing some training yesterday on rights, which was quite fun. I quite enjoyed it. But I've never seen a portability request. I've never seen restriction of posting request. I've never seen, have I seen one correction request? You don't see that many other than SARS, do you?
I think
a few objections to posting, but not
objections. A few
erasures.
Yeah, erasure, anomaly, yeah.
That's it.
I had one that was attached, linked with, so was an individual that withdrawn their consent and attached to their request was the erasure of all the data before. So that was the one that I worked the most. But aside from that, well, only SARS, yeah.
Yeah, but everyone focus on that. We've been doing audits, haven't we, Joe? We're looking at policies and procedures, and there's policies and procedures for SARS, but often, usually no policies and procedures for any other form of rights. And there's a register of SARS, but no register to capture other forms of rights. And we keep saying you need to have a policy of all rights and a procedure that handles, you know, every type of right, and a register. Don't have a register for each type of right, but have a register that identifies, this is the SARS, this is a erase request, this is an objection to posting, etc., etc. So we're still finding that everyone's aware of the SARS, but they're probably aware of, but are not geared up for managing other forms of rights requests.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because they think, because we don't get any, what's the point of having a procedure on it? But that's not the point, is it? Because then if you don't have a procedure or a policy on it, and then you get one, you don't know what to do.
You don't want to be making it up as you go along, do you?
No, definitely not.
Now, another thing that I've read, and I'm absolutely on with this one as well, is that, again, people are predicting there to be a kind of a more awareness of needing to have a data protection strategy, you know, within an organization. Now, don't ask me what that means, but kind of a more strategic approach to data protection rather than it being, maybe it has been very operationally focused, you know, about, you know, data posting activities rather than kind of organizational stuff. And I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I started off 20 years ago when I started my own business doing data strategies, you know, and that's where I actually really enjoyed doing that kind of strategic work on people helping to strategize on data use, but never really on data protection strategies, never really be any call for it. But I think it's right, you know, that we ought to take a strategic approach to data protection and privacy management, compliance management. Again, I don't know if you've seen that?
No, personally, I haven't seen it. No. But I think he's a good one. Adopting like a strategy to be more probably proactive rather than reactive, and just making sure that everyone is just doing it the same thing all together in terms of memberships in the company.
So we'll see that one. Now, you mentioned AI, and I've read some stuff, you know, that. AI being folded into software as a service.
I was scared that you would ignore me.
No. AI being folded into software as a service, again, is a prediction of where it's been. Now, we've been looking at that for quite a few years, 2 years at least, probably, with Salesforce, where they've got their Einstein AI tools that are there on the platform. We haven't actually started to utilize them. We haven't really quite got our head around how to utilize them, but again, this is what people are predicting, that not only will you have those tools at your disposal, but the AI will work on the software and service in the background and then you know, help you with the analysis. So you mentioned AI. I don't know what your thoughts are on where it's going next.
No, I was just mentioning AI, and even for two reasons. One, because of the EU Act, because I think obviously we should at least try to campaign. I'm not sure if it will be subscribing it would be part of the diet or not. And the other one was about the doer bill, because again, back in time is the limit, the right not to subject to automated decision. And one of the examples was to use AI techniques on information scrapped from the internet on applicant for employment. And I know that ICO has provided guidance on actually employment and recruitment and the use of AI techniques for the use of it. But I feel in terms of the UK, there is none regulation around it. So I was feeling like now that we have the EU Act and surely the Duo Bill probably will receive royal assent on this. And therefore, artificial intelligence is something that we'll need to get used to it, because it's something to stay. I think some therefore we'll need to have like regulation soon. Yeah. I hope at least.
We will see. Now, there's some interesting stuff in the chat. We haven't really got time to dive into it, unfortunately, like about SARS and what the request got their home. But I mean, it could be interesting to think about. So I think that's probably all we've got time for today. It's now gone 5:30. What are you doing at the weekend and next week? You've got busy weeks. Oh, I'm away next week. I just remembered I'm on holiday.
Oh, wow.
Friday.
We are going to London.
No, not next week. That's week after.
Oh, no, it's not.
Your diary is slammed.
Yeah,
with
my
meetings.
Diary. I was trying to book a meeting with a client until I saw that the only space I have is actually after work. I don't have any space, not even for lunch.
Oh right. So a busy week for you. So I'm going on Friday. Yeah, well, I'm back on Friday. I'm back on Thursday night actually, so I'll be here on Friday to do the podcast, but I won't have done any preparation.
Where are you going? Staying here.
Going to Sasfay, going skiing in Switzerland.
No, ooh. It's all right for some, eh? Still waiting on PGP skiing trip.
I know, well, I said organise it. Let's go and take a bus out there.
Don't need to say twice.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll have a good time anyway, Phil.
Hopefully.
Leave us to do the prep, I guess. We did have a couple of stories that we wanted to divulge into today. We've not had time to, so we'll save them for next week. Two really interesting topics, kind of around adverts on YouTube and AI voice clones. So we'll take the notes that we made on them for this week, and we'll discuss that next week along with any other news pieces that we see in the meantime.
Right, and on that note, thank you everybody for joining us. Thanks for your contributions. It's been a good session. Really enjoyed having everybody on. Have a great weekend and a good rest of the day, and we'll catch up with you hopefully next week.
Cheers guys.
Thank
see you later
you. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.